This is Matthew Putman, and you're listening to Utility Function. Welcome back. Although we're separated physically from each other, we still find ways to pull together. Thank you for listening during this uncertain time, and thanks to all of you who are striving to innovate and to fight against COVID-19, like my guest here today, health entrepreneur Tom Lee. Tom is the CEO and founder of Galileo Health, a telemedicine company that aims to provide quality healthcare that is affordable and accessible to everyone. Before founding Galileo, he created Epocrates, which is the very first medical app on Apple's mobile platform. He then later went on to create One Medical Group, a membership-based primary care practice, which IPO'd earlier this year, valued at more than $1.5 billion. Tom is a friend and a true health pioneer whose passion and professional interests are driven by his internal desire to help people. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do too.
Well, thanks for coming on, Tom. I know we've been planning doing something like this before, but I pictured you sitting next to me, but like so much of our world now, I'm looking at you in your home. But that's strangely something that I think you've, in a way, predicted as an important thing in the past. And your company is kind of involved with the idea of how we communicate and interact. Can you tell me a little bit about Galileo or how you think about this in this time period?
Yeah, no worries. And nice to connect virtually. I'm just a goggle headset away from being in the room with you. So we'll have to just do this via voice and video. Look, I think we started Galileo as a digital first healthcare model, not because of a pandemic, but because we thought that people in remote areas didn't have access to high quality healthcare. So that was the primary motivation. We'd be overly prescient if we designed this against pandemics per se that quarantine people. But in effect, obviously, that's what we've been seeing with this crisis rolling through the country and the globe. So certainly, we're able to care for a broad population today with the Galileo platform. And then we've also got a home intent service where we've had to adapt a little bit because we go to the homes of the sick and complicated populations that really need care in the home. And we've had to adapt our protocols there as well.
Can you tell me just personally how you adapted a bit? I mean, I last saw you before this started, and we were physically sitting having dinner in Los Angeles with a group of people, and you had a business. This business was starting. You've been successful in other businesses in the medical field that blended interaction with humans and technology in ways. Has your mindset changed now that you are sitting there and knowing that your physicians are also sitting in different places than theirs would be?
It's interesting. Yeah, it has been quite a change. It seems like an eternity ago. I think, when we set up this model, we already had, 10 years of experience managing a virtual team, caring for patients at One Medical. So this is a familiar construct for us in general as clinical leaders in the digital health space. So our clinical team's used to this. There really isn't too much difference for them. They've been working from home for quite some time. I think, obviously the rest of the team who's a little bit more used to being physically present are adapting. And then me personally, frankly, when I was in New York and One Medical was based in San Francisco, I was pretty much on video calls all day. So there is some familiarity to it. It's like, back to the future. I feel like I was doing this a few years ago when I was running One Medical, but it's nice to see.
But what about it looks like you've seen the world already. On the other hand, the world sees itself differently now. It's while I'm curious how you have seen going from what would be, if I think about areas of not accessibility for the Galileo is addressing, there's, I think, a sense of what I'm just curious of your opinion, but almost a sense of what was considered panic to being a sense of urgency to maybe being a new way of thinking for patients. Have you noticed a change in the way that doctors view not being remote and teletherapy, but the way that they deal with patients?
Yeah, look, I think it's hard to evaluate where reality will fall after the crisis period, right? We're just in the middle of it still. I, you know, again, tend to be a little bit more cynical about this is game changing. The world won't be the same. It's hard to evaluate in the heat of this right now. There are, you know, critical issues that healthcare providers are working on in the field in physical world today. And it's important for us to be virtual. And yes, there are patients and providers that are being acclimated to this new virtual first world. I think it's a stretch to say that it becomes, quote unquote, the new normal. I'm a little bit cynical about that lens to things. And so I do think that there will be, kind of like after 9/11, this new lens on the world. And I think that's a positive thing, how we're interconnected, how some of these new virulent strains are incubated, and how we can better prevent that, how we can work better as a globe to work more cohesively about public health and just environment in general, and then how, you know, what I call kind of public entities can better mobilize in the future. But I think you've also seen some really positive things that I do think may be more durable. I think some of the scientific innovation to address more, you know, global viral threats, I think is pretty promising. And I think people's willingness to adapt pretty quickly to a new environment has been also quite promising. So, you know, those are all net positives. But I think, you know, in the light of day, 6 months, 12 months from now, you know, I think for the most part, there will be an incremental change, but not as fundamental as people are predicting.
Now, I have absolutely no idea about this, but in some ways, it seems like Galileo and maybe your career, and I'd love to hear about this, was a little bit of a prediction anyway, and in that you've chosen a technological medium to connect something that is human to what you see as going on in, you know, in the frontiers of the tech world. So in a way, what I'm getting this sense that in a way of what seems like not a huge or maybe incremental change to you, you know, is much bigger to other people. I think telemedicine or, you know, telehealth is something that most of us don't live in a regular time period. How can you give me a little, forgetting COVID, and let's just say you've seen it, whether you've thought about pandemics or whether you've thought that a conversation like this would be necessary anyway, whether you were my doctor or whether you were a friend or another entrepreneur speaking. Can you tell me a little bit how you got here and how your vision has come together to make this happen?
Yeah, sure. I think, and I think that's a great point. I think at some level, the seal has been cracked for a lot of people that have not been living in this digital health world, and to kind of be able to experience it and go, oh, wow, it's not as bad and mysterious as I thought it would be. So I think that has cracked the seal. From my lens, as an innovator and entrepreneur, it's really just goes back to the roots of who I am. I'm ultimately a clinician. I'm trying to take care of individual patients and populations in a higher quality, affordable manner. And, you know, when I first started my entrepreneurial journey, it was really just out of a quizzical lack of understanding of why the healthcare system was designed the way it was, right? It was big, bloated, expensive, not very patient-focused, providers were burning out. And that was 20 years ago. And it's still big, bloated, and inexpensive. So that's why I continue to build companies that can attack the problem much more aggressively. So, you know, Hippocrates was a way to give information to physicians so they can make better decisions at the point of care. One Medical was, hey, how do you validate a higher touch primary care model that's sustainable? Because if you think about primary care as the first line of defense against all the other medical ailments and specialties and big industrial healthcare system, you know, we had kind of scorched earth the primary care system. And so there was very little sustainable primary care. So One Medical was a first validation there to show that you could build a high touch, empathetic, more sustainable primary care model. And with Galileo, the real premise, again, moving to the next phase of the problem, is how do you improve the quality of care given the complexity of care, right? That's really the nut that we're trying to solve for, given all the fantastic innovation going on in life sciences and device innovation. Is a way to harness the intelligence of clinicians to make it much more accessible through a digital form factor to more Americans and citizens, you know, across the globe on a cost-efficient basis. And so that's really what the catalyst was for Galileo. And it's always looking at the next frontier, and hopefully this is, you know, a deeper frontier for us.
Yeah, yeah, I've noticed in... Certainly, I've not a physician and don't and haven't been in a patient care situation in my life, other than being a patient, of course. But if I think I've been a little bit involved in diagnostics and equipment, and we look at that, there's always been a kind of lag in acceptance of technology within that world. So if you work on doing cancer diagnostics, it was you couldn't use digital imagery for a long time. And then now it's figuring out where using artificial intelligence is possible and where it's not. That's often FDA, but it's some other things as well. First of all, was this a barrier early on? And at what point did that start to be overcome? Or do you push it? You know, there's this sort of thought mm-hmm. that if I look at Uber, for instance, they didn't wait until... Mm-hmm. Municipalities allowed it, they did it, and then everybody wanted it, and they caught up. Where are we right now in that continuum?
Yeah, it's a great question. Obviously, healthcare has a lot of regulatory elements to it, and they make sense from a safety perspective, and that can sometimes slow innovation. In the healthcare service arena, for the most part, the boundaries are pretty clear about how you operate. And at One Medical and in Galileo, we haven't had to really push those frontiers. We just have to know those frontiers is where people get tripped up. There are a lot of counterintuitive regulations that most consumer entrepreneurs or non-healthcare entrepreneurs would just kind of constantly just trip over because they're not familiar with. But being a healthcare-focused entrepreneur, we kind of know where those lines are. We look for those lines. You have to be cognizant of it. And then the innovation is navigating and contorting to make sure that you're compliant, but also driving the innovation forward. So something as simple as digital health, sure, there are some regulatory constraints, some for good, some for bad reasons. But those haven't been the primary obstacle to innovation. It's usually... Frankly, it's much more just kind of boring, but it's human behaviors and habits and economic. And those two kind of factors really slow down innovation in healthcare. And you can see in this crisis, those habits have been forced to change and the economics have been forced to change. And you can see very dramatically different new types of technologies being adopted because of it.
Okay, well, it's interesting that you said those two. What you didn't say was a technological hurdle that needs to be overcome. Is there a line, a technological line, that you would say, you know, forgetting regulations, forgetting almost economics, right? Putting all of this aside, that you see a technology on the verge that would make this a much better experience, or would change the world in even a bigger way than you're already doing?
I mean, to be frank, no. The services space, which if, you know, this is the area that we focus on, which is how do you care for patients and populations with diagnosis, therapeutic options, and you know, what I call traditional care, but extended much more broadly. The tech is benefiting from the rest of the consumer tech ecosystem. So all this innovation that's happening, where there's stronger, more vigorous business models in, you know, digital search, digital advertising, finance, those technologies and innovations are relatively commodity when they get to the services industry. It's just how you apply them. The life science side, on the other hand, and the data side, meaning when it comes to really understanding what's going on with, you know, the body with data, with devices and life sciences. That's truly innovative. And our goal is to harness that at the right stage, but it's still too early. So
using it in order to either give advice, treat patients, and know that data, how it was generated through better devices and better data analytics and so on.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, because I think of the clinical layer, the delivery layer, as a translation engine of what science and research says that's reasonably likely to be true, right? And so so you need that body of evidence. And so the frontier is actually happening in the life science and medical device spaces. And then when things become true enough, then that's when the provider layer incorporates it. The problem in a physical world is that provider layer absorbs that new knowledge very slowly, right? The average absorption of best in class thinking is, 5 to 10 years of translation energy, which is part of why we want to start Galileo. It's too slow.
Right. You know? Right. So I want to go back a little bit in your life. You went to medical school. There was something before medical school and you at what point did you decide that medicine was something that you wanted to do? Do you have a mentor? Had you researched or you wanted to take? I'm just curious of how you got into this.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to kind of summarize some of the key folks in milestones, it starts with my parents. They were, ultimately great, great people, very generous and academic in nature. They allowed me to explore, almost anything of interest to me. I was a pretty curious child, I think, is the rumor. And so they pretty much allowed me to grow into whatever I was exploring as long as it had some value
exploring?
To the world. Pretty much
what were
anything.
You exploring? I mean, what did you love as a kid?
It was pretty much everything. Music, art, sciences, play, almost anything in the world I found interesting. And they didn't really hamper too much. They tried to discourage me from playing too many sports, but I liked sports a lot too. So they just try to keep me focused. And I was just doing, most people who know me know that I'm usually doing more than one thing. It's just, there's so much stuff that interests me. And so that was probably one of the first influences, just being able to explore multiple things at once. And obviously, in hindsight, that allows you to then see patterns across different domains. But I wasn't thinking about it from a utilitarian perspective. I was just like, I just like all this stuff. I mean, life is cool, right? So, and then medicine, ironically, was not my interest because both my parents were physicians. And, I was kind of a contrarian, and especially at that age. So I was like, I don't want to be a doc. But it made the most sense for who I was. I really liked caring for people. I was fairly involved in community service and in general helping people. And I was pretty good at the sciences. I also really loved the arts. I almost became, a graphic designer. So that was the other passion. Those were the two competing interests when I was graduating from college. Ultimately, I decided on a career in medicine just as a pragmatic choice. But once I actually got into med school and started caring for patients, that's when the light bulb clicked. There was two light bulbs that went off in my head. One was, oh, wow, I can actually take my studies and help people. The two actually are now connected because before, studies were just this abstract thing in isolation, and interacting and helping people were the separate thing. Now you had the two intersecting. And so the more I understood, the more I could help people. And it was much more of a direct translation. When I was studying G-proteins in biochem, I was like, I have no idea how this is going to help anybody. But as I got closer to the practice of medicine, it became clear. And so that's when the light bulb kind of clicked for me. That was the first light bulb. And then the second light bulb was as I was finishing up my medical training, I'd pretty much worked in almost every medical setting, rural, urban, low income, commercial, HMO, whatever, you name it. And every system was just chaotic, disorganized. Nobody knew why we were doing what we're doing. And for me to practice in the world of medicine, I didn't want to practice in that environment. So my second light bulb was, you know, I think I'm motivated to change the bigger system, not the micro system. I could have changed my single practice, but I think my other insight, which was, you know, fairly late, I'm second year resident at this stage, was I think my purpose is to transform a broader ecosystem of health rather than my own practice. And so that's when I began my entrepreneurial journey.
This is really interesting, and I hadn't thought of it in this way before, that somebody that starts out with loads of interest the way you did, that this combination of things, you go to something that has enormous complexity in a way. You know, a human, when you're taking studies, and then you kind of, a human is this multivariate weird thing where you're dealing with, you know, historical, genetic, environment, all these things that are going on. And then you're stepping back even one step further and thinking about all of the variables in the world that can one play with. And some of those are new types of technologies. I hadn't thought of it in that way. It's fascinating.
I'm
wondering though now, because I've, you know, I had something similar in my life, going from being, you know, playing music, producing plays to working in science, to now being an entrepreneur. Now, being an entrepreneur or a business leader, do you worry, as I sometimes do about myself, but do you worry about that it actually starts seeming where your business might have this much broader, wider grasp than you would as an individual, as a doctor? Do you ever worry that your life itself, the work you're doing, is focused on being a businessman now?
It depends on how you define that. You know, it has such a, you know, today it has a negative label. Let's take away the label.
I didn't mean it as a label. I meant the focus of what you're doing in your life. Do you still feel it to be encompassing of all of these different loves that you have and curiosities?
I guess that's what I'm saying a little bit is, you know, being an entrepreneur and running a company could sound like it's business, but in reality for me, it's, you know, it's people, solving problems, creativity, connecting dots, navigating complicated landscapes. So to me, the job of leadership and entrepreneurship and running businesses is fascinating because of those types of challenges and skills you get to develop over time. And I think, you know, the number one is, I think most people will usually say, is just, it's still the people. So I learned so much about people dynamics, and, you know, motivations and fears and communication that, you know, there's still so much to learn about individuals as humans and as collective organizations that at some level, the act of leadership is a constant learning exercise about people and people dynamics. And I find that just still fascinating.
True. I guess it's, I guess that does have some similarities, is this sort of balance of, you know, how do humans make their own decisions as a patient would, make, you know, figure out what their life is outside of visiting you, but at the same time, you guiding them to try to have a health, you know, do things that are healthy. I guess that's true with members of your team still. That's interesting.
It is fun. I mean, if you think about humanity, like, you know, there's an element of, you know, things that are specific to humans. We don't know for sure, but beyond, but this ability to take an idea, this abstraction, and then make it become reality. Like, think about, you know, are other species able to do that? And it's such a unique thing. Like, I'm always fascinated by that ability for us to just take an idea, and then at some point, that actually becomes real, you know? And so, you know, when you do a physical good, it's a little bit more obvious, you know, I have this idea, I'm going to build this physical good. When you start designing software or services, they become a lot more ethereal and intangible, and it's still pretty gratifying, but it's just, you know, it's weird when you really kind of think about it. So I like it. It's a fun process, and, you know, people underestimate how hard it is to take an idea and make it real. And so for me, you know, the more I do, the more I understand it and learn it and find it just, you know, endlessly satisfying. You know?
Well, don't worry. I don't underestimate it. I know. So some of my, this is really great. I'm curious of what you think is next. I don't know why I was a little surprised, but that you work within these confines of our current technologies and our current regulations and our current healthcare system and knowledge of, and you think there's plenty of room to navigate within that framework. But I'm also interested in what you think is next. And this is both technologically or how one would use research or science or the blend of science and medicine.
Yeah, I think you can see where this frontier is headed. Our goal at Galileo is to bring everybody up to the highest level of care that's possible today. Right now, there's a huge variance of care, and a lot of people have what are called just mediocre level care. So how do we move that up to the highest level? Then the next frontier, which I think, you know, still was away, is how do you take all of this innovation on research and apply it much more dynamically to the population, right? And so migrating away from the RCT into a much more dynamic research ecosystem where humanity can solve much more of their problems that are much more personal on a research platform that's relevant. So I think that's really exciting because now you start looking at curative and highly restorative therapeutics that apply to individuals. So that's going to be fascinating. But that's kind of where you can see, at least within my lane of care delivery, where it bleeds into, right? Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Tom, for spending this time. I know you guys must be incredibly busy right now.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're making a huge difference to a lot of people. So thanks for spending this
time. No, likewise. Thank you.